Welcome back to WBOI Presents. If you're just joining us, Nick Jansen is still with us in the studio, and when he's not helping to pitch during our fall fun drive, he covers energy and the environment for Indiana Public Broadcasting. And Nick, you were pretty busy last month, especially down at the State House. What are some of the things going on down there?
Yeah, Ben, there's a lot going on. Even though the legislature isn't in session, they have what they call study committees, where they'll look at any given topic. And one of the biggies last month was CAFOs. These are confined animal feeding operations. They're basically these really big barns. They house hundreds, thousands of animals, you know, chickens, pigs, cows, and there's, you know, a big pit underneath that collects all the manure. And, you know, they're becoming increasingly popular in Indiana and all across the country.
They've drawn a lot of controversy here in Indiana. What were some things people came to say before the committees?
Yeah, so there's a lot of farmers who really like CAFOs. You know, these are guys with family farms that they say they couldn't stay in business without the extra revenue CAFOs bring. One of the folks who testified before the committee is Josh Trinari. He's the executive director of Indiana Pork, which represents the hog farmers in the state. And he sort of explained how CAFOs fit into the farm economy for a legislator from urban Northwest Indiana who wasn't as familiar with them.
There's significant value in the manure. A farmer is going to land apply the amount of nutrients he needs to raise that crop. If he can supplement that with nutrient value in manure that he's getting because he has that livestock facility, then that's of great benefit for him.
So basically, farmers growing corn or soybeans will build a CAFO. They can make money selling the meat, and then they use the manure as fertilizer for their crops and don't have to buy as much synthetic fertilizer?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, folks who oppose CAFOs say they're cruel to animals, they pollute waterways, they smell terrible, which is a big problem, especially because the Indiana Department of Environmental Management and the EPA can't regulate odor. And there's also evidence that they lower property values for surrounding homes.
So what's this committee going to do?
Well, as with all study committees, they will issue a report. I spoke with the senator who chairs the committee, and she said that the big thing that stands out to her is both supporters and opponents say they want local zoning and planning boards to keep control of the permitting process. Those are the commissions that basically decide whether or not someone can build a CAFO. And so a report might kind of focus on that topic.
You also reported some news about a lead testing program the state is doing.
That's right. The Indiana Finance Authority is doing free lead testing in public schools. Unfortunately, fewer than half of Indiana school districts are participating in the program. That's what the executive director reported to the committee. And that's a little disheartening, but those tests will be starting up soon, and schools have until next spring to sign up for the program. I also got an update on a big construction project in Indianapolis that has a sister project here in Fort Wayne that's kind of cool.
This is the combined sewer overflow tunnel. First, why don't you explain what CSOs are?
Yeah, so a little background, Fort Wayne, Indianapolis, a lot of older cities have what's called combined sewer systems. So basically, you know, our sewage and our wastewater from our homes flow into the same sewer lines that rainwater and storm runoff flow into. And when there's a lot of rain or there's a really heavy rain, all of that can back up and overflow into streams and rivers, which is obviously terrible for water quality.
And these tunnels will fix that.
Right. It's basically a giant storage tank that's deep underground. Here's Mark Jacob. He was testifying before one of these study committees. He's a VP at Citizens Energy Group, which is building the tunnel in Indianapolis. And he's explaining how much it'll alleviate this problem down in Indianapolis.
We're planned to capture up to 97%, but again, good news coming because we're going to exceed that. We are going to get 60 overflows a year that Jeff talked about down to 2 to 4 overflows a year. And we're going to reduce the CSO volume from about 6 billion gallons a year into the stream to a little over 200 million gallons a year.
And that 200 million gallons might still sound like a lot, but it is a huge reduction for the city of Indianapolis.
And as you said, Fort Wayne is getting a tunnel like this?
Yep, ours will be a little smaller. It's 5 miles long. It's a nearly $200 million project, and it'll reduce overflows by 90%. The city just broke ground on it a few months ago, and it should be up and running by 2023.
We'll all be looking forward to that. moving away from the State House, there was a big story involving Duke Energy that broke this past month. What happened there?
Yeah, that was a little unusual. There was a group, a bunch of environmental groups that threatened to sue Duke Energy. They said Duke wasn't releasing information that the EPA requires companies to release.
This is information about coal ash ponds and what happens to those ponds during emergencies.
Yeah, and first I should say, coal ash is what's left over when coal is burned. It's literally the ash that's left over when it's burned for electricity and power plants. And this coal ash is typically stored in ponds. It's pretty toxic. It can contaminate groundwater if not contained properly. And Duke is supposed to release information about emergency responders in case these ponds breach. They're also supposed to release maps that show how surrounding areas would be affected.
You said this was a little unusual. What ended up happening?
Well, these groups threatened to sue. They claimed Duke was the only utility in the country not to release this required information. And a few days later, they actually released the information. In a statement, they said they'd revisited the issue and determined it was appropriate to publish the information.
All right, that's Nick Jansen, bringing us up to date on the latest environmental news from across the Hoosier State. Nick, thanks for being here.
My pleasure, Ben.
Second City Theater Chicago is known for its famous alumni, popular sketch shows, and improvisation classes. This week, members of the troupe are sharing their secrets right here in Fort Wayne, in a guest artist residency with the Jesters of the University of St. Francis. The Jesters are a talented group of actors with developmental disabilities whose disabilities disappear when they hit the stage and have been delighting audiences with their original production since 1978. Earlier this week, WBOI's Julia Meek contacted participating artist Lisa Bainey and Nick John by phone in their iconic Chicago Landmark building to discuss their passions for sharing the craft and the fine art of improv.
Lisa Bainey, Nick John, thank you for joining me here. Hello.
Hello, this is Lisa.
Hello.
Now, Second City Theater, that has to be one absolutely cool job. What does it feel like to be in the improv comedy business?
It is a super cool job. I still walk into this building and look around and just feel how amazing it is that I get to work where so many great people have come through and it's history. I'd never take it for granted. It is an amazing job.
What about you, Nick?
Also an amazing job. I mean, you can hear me. I'm stuttering because I've been here. I'm involved with this since 1991, and before that, even a bit longer, just taking the classes, and it's informed everything I do. It's not only an art form, but I dare say it's a little bit of a lifestyle choice, the whole improv way of thinking.
It has to be. It has to be in your blood as well. Has it always been your passion? Like, did you dream about it way back when that you would possibly get to be a comedian one day and with Second City, no less?
No, I discovered this accidentally. I have a degree in microbiology, of all things, and stumbled into a free class somewhere. And after three free classes, I was like, oh, I got to just explore this a bit more. And it was only at that point I was like, man, I love doing this. So that's where I fell in love with it. You know, let me pass it.
And my journey to improvisation was very much about the fact that my dad is a jazz musician, and okay. I was supposed to be a piano player. I was supposed to complete the family trio, piano, bass, and drums. So I had a lot of improvisational music training, but I was a little rebellious, and I just didn't want to do that. I fell into theater and realized I loved the improvisational comedy side of theater much more than music. But they have a lot of links, a lot of things in common.
You know, I do get that, but I'd also have to say, if I didn't think you guys were doing me an improv right there on the spot, the fact that microbiologist and jazz pianist turned improv comedy team, I think that's just a great story all in itself. But then you two do have a great story, to be sure. So, okay, let's fast forward to this very year. You have an NEA grant to be working with our own community here in Fort Wayne and the Jesters Theater Troupe. Now, the Jesters are an amazingly talented troupe with, disabilities that absolutely disappear when they hit that stage, and they've been going strong here in the community for almost 40 years. So what do you think of their skills and their spirit and their whole presence?
What I love so much about the Jesters is how brave they are and willing to just get out there and perform and be vulnerable in front of each other and an audience. When we were first getting ready to come and work with the Jesters the first time, we were at first just, you know, working on our regular, the sort of workshop we would do with any group of people. And then I said, you know, these are theater people. These are people who perform on a regular basis. This is a theater company of people who love this and embrace this. And we can step it up. They can do some really great,
yes,
interesting things. Yeah, definitely.
That should have been, well, opened up a whole new spectrum for you.
Yeah, definitely. We, you know, bring to them much more scenic, interesting character type things. And they always embrace it. Just love doing it. They're comfortable. They're hilarious. And I love that, you know, we don't really necessarily push funny. We don't tell them to try and be funny. But we laugh with them every time we play with them.
That is so cool. So, because you are both teachers, I'm going to ask you, what would be the single most important tip you could give all of us now, right here on the radio, all of our listeners, about the fine art of improv? If anybody just wished they had the skill, what would you tell them?
I tell them, we improvise daily. I'm improvising with you right now. I don't know what your questions are going to be. I don't know what I'm going to say. But we improvise. And the only difference is when we're on stage doing improv, it's heightened. So we're listening more and saying yes more. So I say be brave and just treat every situation on stage like you're treating real life.
That's great. That is great.
Oh, definitely. Be positive, be open, support each other, and play.
You make it sound awfully easy and doable, too. I like that a lot. And I just can't thank you enough for giving me part of your day off for this conversation. And so last question before I let you go. I know what an incredible gift you are giving to our community, especially the Jesters themselves, and who better deserves it, I might add. I would like to know, in the meantime, what do you take away from an experience like this, working with these folks in this situation?
It's so rewarding to me to see a transformation, even in just the couple of days that I get to spend with them, to meet them, to feel their energy and their enthusiasm, and then to be able to share some things with them that they actually are able to use. And I see them transforming and enjoying it and laughing with each other and with me. And it's just an amazing, really, really rewarding experience.
I love it when I can see people explore their own creativity and people realizing, oh, I have ideas and my ideas have a lot of worth. And not only do my ideas have a lot of worth, but they're being supported. So I can stay and do whatever I want to stay and do, and people will cheer me on. And that's a really empowering concept.
Lisa Bainey, Nick John, again, many, many thanks. Now, safe travels, happy trails, and cheers to the Second City Theater Chicago.
All right, thanks so much.
Definitely.
The Second City Theater opening keynote session is tomorrow. Workshops for students and community professionals will be conducted tomorrow and Friday, and the workshop for Jester participants is Saturday.
For our final segment, we'd like to bring back Zach Bernard.
It's good to be back.
September has come to an end. Perhaps this is because I've spent so much time listening to Scott Simon, but we should include some sports in tonight's program. Looking at October baseball, we'll start with the National League. Zach, do you think your world champion Chicago Cubs will get back to the series?
Anyone who's listening is going to call me a homer, but I do. And it's not just blind faith, I can assure you that. The way that the team finished meant a lot to me when you go 15-4 down the stretch, especially after we got swept by Milwaukee. You know, I don't really... there's the old cliche, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And I think the way that the Cubs finished is very encouraging. I don't trust Dusty Baker as much as a manager strategically compared to Joe Maddon. And I think that when you compare both and where the Cubs and the Washington Nationals are right now, I think the Cubs stand a decent chance to win this upcoming series and then follow that and then, you know, just take whatever momentum they have and continue to take it all the way through the World Series. I think they can do it again.
And the American League has at least three compelling storylines. The recovering city of Houston is behind the Astros. The Indians seem to be returning to form. And Boston has a history of getting hot at the right time. Who do you see rising to the top?
Well, I don't trust Boston's pitching, so in this multiple choice, I strike them immediately. I like Boston. I would like to see them prove me wrong because I think Chris Sale's a great pitcher, and I think that they've got a lot of fun guys, but I don't have a whole lot of faith in them. Cleveland and Houston are the two top members of the American League class, I think. I think Cleveland is one of the best baseball teams in general that we've seen over the last 5 or 7 years. They scare me an awful lot. And, you know, if the Cubs are not the team to do it, I think it's because a team like Cleveland would be the one to beat them. But I will say that the one thing I would hope for more than anything is to see a championship series of the Astros and Cleveland. I think it could be so compelling and some of the best baseball we've seen in a long time if we can get that matchup. But Cleveland is the class of that league.
We've certainly got a lot to look forward to in October sports-wise. And here at 89.1 WBOI, we're finally settling back into a standard alignment. Tonight we have not one, not two, but three All Things Considered hosts in the studio. Zach moved from ATC to Morning Edition back in July.
And Ben has been filling in as the interim host since then.
And now we get to introduce Araceli Gomez-Aldana, not just as our new reporter, but the new host of All Things Considered here at 89.1 WBOI. To use a sports metaphor, I'll be passing the baton at the end of the fall fun drive. Araceli, best of luck hosting ATC. I know you'll enjoy it.
Thank you, Ben. I'm looking forward to it, and I'm happy to be at WBOI here in Fort Wayne.
Tonight's program would not have been possible without the support from you, our listener. We are still in the midst of our fall fund drive and building momentum throughout this week. Your support is much appreciated, and you can show your support for this programming by going online to WBOI.org.
We are close to reaching our goal. Our goal this fall fund drive is $225,000. If you enjoy content like what you just heard, please consider donating any amount that is comfortable for you at WBOI.org.
That's our show for tonight. Special thanks to the WBOI news team for putting this together this week.
Zach Bernard, Nick Jansen, Julia Meek, and Katie Anderson. WBOI would not exist without you. This was the first time we've put something like this together, and we're already making plans to do it again at the end of October. I'm Araceli Gomez-Aldana.
And I'm Ben Clemmer. The music for tonight's show is by Michaela Nevers and Mark Waldick. Thank you for listening. Folktales is next. Enjoy.